Good morning. Hello. Welcome to the original Loretta Brown Show radio to open the heart, heal the soul, awaken the consciousness. Hello, Mr. Benny Mathers.
Hi there.
What is happening?
Not a whole lot. Great news, though. Okay, you know, a few weeks ago we talked about Punxsutawney Phil and didn't see a shadow, so spring's a little early, right? Well, I would like to send a congratulations to Punxsutawney Phil and his lady, Phyllis. They welcome two babies today.
Yeah,
two little baby groundhogs. I know, right?
Whoa.
They're going to have a busy spring.
Boy, they sure are.
I know, right?
That's great. That is really, really a sweet thing. Yeah. I do too. Yeah, it's perfectly timed.
I mean,
love that.
If you're not going to see your shadow, you got to figure something else out to do. So,
like popcorn.
Just about.
I like it. So, yeah, we got Easter coming up on Sunday. And I don't know if people out there, you know, celebrate Easter in many different ways. I hope people are going to do Easter eggs. I always like Easter eggs.
Yeah, the weather should be okay for the Pacific Northwesterners. We're in between on this year because, you know, the boys are just at that age where they're like, they kind of want to do it, but then like, man, they also just want to stay with their video games. But,
I get you.
But they still want to color. I know they're really artistic. They didn't get that from me, that's for sure. But I like sitting down and making all the different variations of colored eggs. And we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. To me, it's fun as a project with the kids, right? You know, that's fun. My kids are all grown up and we still do stuff like that. I know.
It's important.
You know, whatever happens. That's right. And so lots of stuff coming up. We had the spring equinox. Then we had a lunar eclipse on Monday.
Yeah. Wasn't it like the something worm? Or what was it?
Worm moon.
Worm moon. Yeah, say that.
I can't
10
say
times
that.
Fast.
It was a full moon.
Right.
It's a full moon in Libra with a lunar eclipse. That I here's a little piece of information. It occurred here in the Pacific Northwest about the maximum darkest was at 12:12 a.m. Right after midnight on Monday, and for those people living out in the Redmond area. Like myself, at 1:01 a.m., just a little bit later, less than an hour later, we had a 2.6 earthquake out here, a mile from Redmond. I know.
No kidding. I did not catch that one.
It just was a little shaker. And
a little rumble?
I woke up, and I had just gone to sleep, and I woke up, and I went, oh, it's an earthquake. How interesting. So we do have lots of little ones. Don't get scared, people. We have them all the time.
Yeah.
I got a sister that lives in San Diego and she visits once in a while and she goes, oh, you have earthquakes here too. And I go, oh, you're tuned into that, aren't you? Yeah. So just interesting. The moon, you know, has a little pull.
Shaking and, things up a little bit.
Shaking. Right. Yeah. People have been feeling a little bit emotional and a little bit crazy. So anyway, that's how that goes. So let's do a little check-in. I forget to announce this. I'm the owner of Reiki Oasis, located right here in the greater Seattle area for the last almost 30 years. I can never figure out exactly how long I've been in business. And we do all kinds of fun things over there. And every month I have a temple class for ladies. So this past weekend, we had a wonderful long spring equinox, Easter eclipse gathering, and just all the ladies that came, thank you so much. It nourishes our souls. People just, you know, we sit around and cry and sing and dance and have a good time. Anyway, that's how that goes.
I think it's great.
So just
keep it going.
Just a shout out.
Yeah.
Anybody? Yeah. Just keep it going. And circles are important. So you can check out about Reiki Oasis at ReikiOasis.com and schedule anything there. I do a lot of things via Zoom. And I do some things in person, but my clientele base is too big anymore. I can't get y'all into the office. So, yeah, that's how that goes.
Make it work.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll see you later.
Oh, no. No, I'm not running you out of the room, buddy.
You're
always
welcome.
You can stay here the whole time and I'll just sit and listen. Yeah, that's for sure. So anyway, like I said, a little astrology check-in. We did just have that spring equinox, the full moon lunar eclipse in Libra this past Monday, which launched us into a very powerful eclipse season, or the continuation of an eclipse season that's been going on for a while. I do want to point out that we do have North Node Aries, South Node Chiron, or excuse me, South Node, yeah, Chiron is in Aries, South Node Libra axis going on. And this lunar eclipse was in Libra. The solar eclipse coming in up on April 8th is in Aries. Whew, new moon solar eclipse. And let's not forget to mention April 20th. I'll get to that in a second. April is a powerhouse of astrological energies with Mercury retrograde on April 1st. So we've been having all these planets going direct. And don't be afraid of Mercury retrograde. It has a, I think retrogrades always get kind of a bad rap, but it's just a opportunity to revisit some things. And Mercury is a planet of communication. And sometimes it makes it easier for us to access our intuition or get messages from beyond, you know, go deep. And like I said, the Aries solar eclipse on April 8th, which has been talked about and talked about and talked about. You can find it all over the internet where the eclipses are making a great big huge cross across the United States. It's the great eclipses of the United States. And you know, many people are talking about it in a biblical fashion. You know, we just had the eclipse that crossed over all these, the seven cities named Salem, and this one's crossing over seven cities named Nineveh. And it's been 7 years since 2017 that that other thing crossed over, and so forth and so on. But it's very fascinating. I don't really believe in predicting things, but it's good to take a look at astrological weather and just maybe ponder how this might affect you and the people around us. So the Aries solar eclipse conjunction Chiron in Aries at 19 degrees on April 8th is a rebirth on your healing journey, and it may reveal new potentials coming to light over the rest of the year. We need to wait until October for the other, I call it the bookends of eclipses, because it's going to happen back there in October. And look for common themes during this time that might be carried forward. You might even look back at 2017 and go, wow, what's been going on? And what do you think is coming up? And then, of course, we've got Pluto has moved into Aquarius out of Capricorn, and we'll dip back into Capricorn for a bit there in the fall, September, October, and through the second week of November, past the elections. And then it goes into Aquarius for the next 20 years. And yeah, well, you know, we get to find out what kind of innovations that brings in, especially around technology. So Jupiter in April, Jupiter and Uranus meet up at 21 degree 49 Taurus on April 20th. And this is the first conjunction in Taurus since 1941. It's been 83 years. And Taurus is ruled by Venus, and so there's probably going to be themes around romance and money, and there could be some other things because, you know, Taurus to me is, it's an earth sign, and you know, big daddy Jupiter, you know, coming in. There could be some visible things for us to see. So this energy is accelerating and amplifying the sudden changes for the future and taking us forward. So it the and Uranus, by the way, is kind of a risk-taking energy. It's triggering Taurus, our earth energy, you know, our kind of stability. So just kind of be with that a little bit. You can research that a little bit more. A sextile from Mars in Pisces is an intuitive motivation to trust the energy and make changes, ready or not. You know, whenever I tell people, you know, changes are coming, I can never quite figure out people's response to the word change. And they're always like, Loretta, is that good or bad? And remember, we are participants in life, and we're not victims, right? So take a look at that and bring yourself forward. And I think it's exciting times. This is great change on our planet. And my goodness, I do think that we need it. Now, on that carpet of information, I'd like to bring in my guest. And I'm excited to have her. My guest today is Judy Safrir, MD. She's author of absolutely an amazing book called Sacred Psychiatry: Bridging the Personal and Transpersonal to Transform Health and Consciousness. Judy is a holistic healer with a private psychiatry and psychoanalysis practice in Newton, Massachusetts, across the country. She is a board-certified adult and child psychiatrist and psychoanalyst on the faculties of Harvard Medical School and the Boston Psychoanalytical Institute, and teaches and supervises at the Cambridge Health Alliance. And although thoroughly trained in the conventional allopathic approach to psychiatric care, she no longer endorses it and in fact believes that it causes harm. The multimodal approach she makes use of with her patients integrates her conventional training in adult and child psychiatry and psychoanalysis with functional medicine and Eastern medicine, ketamine-assisted psychotherapy, archetypal psychology and trauma work, shamanism, energy healing, homeopathy, and spiritual herbalism, astrology, the tarot, and her commitment to sacred activism. Wow. Judy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Loretta, for having me. I'm excited to be here with you.
Yes, me too. I am absolutely fascinated and extremely curious about your practice. Your book, you know, I'm reading through, you are a complete, I don't know what to call it. You do a little bit of everything and weave it together in a very unique way. I would like to start with a little bit about you because I'm sure that my listeners are not overly familiar with you. What led you into what you're doing, and you know, when did you make this shift over? What brought that about?
Well, I was practicing as a fairly conventional psychoanalyst and psychotherapist, which already is not particularly conventional for a psychiatrist. Psychiatrists are not often trained as psychoanalysts and more often function to prescribe in our culture today. So my practice was already somewhat different, but in 2005, when I was 49 years old, I had a series of losses in a very short period of time. Both my parents died within 3 months of one another, and my marriage ended with, and I had three small children. And I was just kind of reeling and decided at that point to seek consultation with an astrologer, like, what is going on here? And astrology, that wasn't as strange as that might sound, because I had grown up with a father who was also a psychiatrist and psychoanalyst and a closet astrologer. So I was familiar with astrology from my home growing up. And but he, you know, didn't want anybody to know about it because of fear for his reputation. So I consulted an astrologer for the first time. And I was so intrigued and blown away and impressed with everything that she understood about me and what she had to say, that I went back to consult her numerous times over the next couple of years. I looked at the charts of my children and other people in my family, other important people, and eventually resolved that I wanted to become an astrologer myself. And so I apprenticed myself to a famous astrologer, Stephen Forrest, and then subsequently another well-known astrologer, Maurice Fernandez. And that was kind of the gateway for me beginning to explore all kinds of different things, including shamanism and modalities such as Reiki and energy healing. And also, I began to look into functional medicine. And at that time, in 2011, there was the beginning talk about the connection between the gut microbiome and the brain that was not part of the conversation the way it is today. And I started learning about that and treating psychiatric illnesses with supplements, and eventually learned about environmental causes of psychiatric illness, such as mold toxicity. And so one is very, in a very organic way, I added one modality after another to what I was doing and kind of opened up my practice, and it became more holistic. But, you know, the psychoanalytic, psychological piece is still important. And when I see patients, I understand them through that lens, in part, a personality part.
I I love that. I actually do. So at age 49, I'm just sitting with this. What was happening in your chart? You said you went and saw an astrologer. And can you talk a little more about that? Yeah.
Yeah. So 49 is the time for everyone, not just for me, but for everyone, of the Chiron return. And it's really quite common in my practice that people come to see me when they're 48, 49, 50 years old at the time of their Chiron return, because Chiron astrologically symbolizes a way in which there is something inside of us that needs to be healed. And often at that point in time for women, it's kind of the end of the reproductive years and there's a big shift going on hormonally. But for everybody, sort of 50 is like some kind of threshold point where mortality comes into focus in a new way. And many people have a desire to spiritualize their life at that time. I mean, I think the Chiron return was very much fueling that exploration. And also, there was a great wish to heal myself. And I mean, Chiron symbolizes wounds that can't be healed, really. That and I think that's true. I think there's ways in which we are wounded that maybe can never be just like it didn't happen, but we learn to be more skillful about dealing with it. It loses its charge, but it doesn't like go away entirely.
Yeah, I was thinking when you were talking, so we currently have Chiron, we have Aries, and we also have the North Node Aries. We've got these eclipses coming up. What is your take on and also the Jupiter Uranus thing on April 20, I think, is really important. What is your take on all of this? And also, I'm going to pull this in already because I know you're going to weave it together. I can feel it. How are these things affecting us? And is this affecting us more potently than you've seen in the past, or just?
Well, we're going through a time of enormous transition on the planet. I remember even like 15 years ago with my second astrology teacher, Maurice Fernandez, and him talking about the lineup of planets in Capricorn in January 2020. Now, this was, you know, like 15 years ago from now, so it was really a long time ago. And he was looking at that and saying, you know, what is going to happen then? You know, like there was an indication that there was going to be a big restructuring in some kind of way. And like you, I do not believe in prediction, but I am very much aware of the astrological weather. And that weather indicated that there was going to be some kind of huge shift and redistribution of power and something really massive that was going to happen. I think like these things that we're talking about with Chiron on the North Node for the eclipse and the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction, they're significant, but they're not of the magnitude of that lineup of the planets in Capricorn. And that was, you know, what it turned out to be was the pandemic.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget him talking about that and sort of feeling a little bit anxious and sort of aware of the awe that he felt looking at it and just wondering what that was going to be. And I think we do see that there was a world that existed prior to the pandemic, and now it is in some kind of way irrevocably changed. Yeah. You know, we're not the same as we were before the pandemic. And in terms of these configurations that are coming up, I think it's really pretty significant that Chiron is directly, I mean, to the degree with the solar eclipse on April 8th. It's also a time now of the United States Chiron return and the United States Pluto return. And we see that there's like a degree of dysfunction going on in our country, and not just in our country, but around the world, but in our country, where it's just all kinds of wounding and things that are like very difficult pieces of our history we're having to reconcile with. Like, there's much more consciousness about the legacy of slavery than there ever was. Same with what has happened with the First Nation people, that this is all coming to consciousness in a way that didn't exist previously. Not that it wasn't already happened and was there, but we're aware of it in a new way, and we're having to reckon with it in a new way. And I see that as, you know, like, and you know, with that Chiron on the eclipse, I think there is the potential for healing. It does say that there could be a healing outcome of all of this, but it's not a guarantee in any kind of way. It could symbolize just great wounding. And it's really up to us, the way we use our consciousness to make use of these energies. And similarly, the conjunction of Jupiter and Uranus on April 20th, people are excited about that. Jupiter is often a planet that brings about blessings, although not always. It can also simply magnify something because it's like the great gas giant. Whatever it touches, it sort of makes bigger. And Uranus is this type of archetypal energy that is all about revolution and about a new way of looking at things, a new paradigm. It represents technology. I mean, there's, you know, reason to interpret it as potentially some kind of download or something that we're going to understand that's going to be like a paradigm shift.
I get asked these questions a lot by my clients, and I'm going to say this because I do take the temperature sometimes of the world across all my clients, right? And the questions that they ask, I can feel, I'll just put it that way, I can sense that change is afoot. As they say, we're in the process of it. And you're absolutely right that all those line up in Capricorn, we will never go back to the world that we were in. So that means we are going forward. And if we need these aha moments, if we need some sort of opening of consciousness, if we need to have something occur that opens our consciousness, then we're right on time for that.
Right. And we do need something to open our consciousness. Like, the way things are going is completely unsustainable and very, very destructive to the earth and for most of its beings. Yeah. So we really do need a wake up and a change and a shift. It's not sustainable the way it has been.
Yeah, absolutely. I interviewed Irvin Laszlo a while back, and we were talking about change. And he says, you know, Loretta, the way that this works is that the center structure will stay, you know, it's there, whatever that structure is, and the old structure, we'll call it. And around the edges start to emerge all these movements of new things, you know, new thought, new ways of doing things. And then those things around the edges begin to build. And at some point, the center collapses down and those move right in. And that to me is that consciousness raising, you know, those people becoming aware or this greater sensitivity or whatever it is, you know, even the wars on our planet and things like that. Like, I'm not going to get too far into that because I want to talk about you, but just this, I'm in agreement with you, right? And I also think it's timely. I think we need it and we need to heal. And I also, this idea of Chiron, the wound that cannot be healed. And yet maybe there is a way, and I know you work with people, where we integrate this in, or we accept this, or we, you know, like the Kintsugi vase that's broken and put together with gold, we bring this together now in a very different way and we contain something different.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, there's that song by Leonard Cohen, like, it's in the broken places where the light comes in. And, you know, very often that chironic wound becomes a source of empowerment for the person. Like, maybe it's never going to be not broken, but it can be the the journey that led there and what a person has made of it can be part of the contribution and their unique gift that they're able to offer to the world due to their suffering.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you incorporate astrology into your practice, how do you bring that in? Curious.
Well, you know, it's, I always, when I ask for people to fill out the intake paperwork, I always get their astrological data if possible. And it's on my website that is one of my skill sets and interests. But not everyone is interested in that. Mm-hmm. Like I've had patients say to me, you know, do we have to talk about that? I said, absolutely not. You know, that's not necessary. Or, you know, someone else like worried that I was a flaky person because, they were interested in other things that I did, but kind of worried about that. And then other people come to see me specifically because they're really interested in that. And can we look at my chart together, you know? And like very often before I see a patient, I'll look at their chart, but not always. Sometimes I just like to see them without having that. And then it'll be really very interesting to get to know them a little bit and then take a look at their chart. So it really depends on the person. For some patients, it's a big, big part of what we do, you know, like in terms of their psychotherapy, just like trying to, like I'm thinking of one person where, it's been really hard for him to, he's been extremely successful professionally, and very gifted, and everything came easily and effortlessly to him, in terms of success achievement, but his personal life and his relationship life has been really not satisfying at all. And it's all there in his chart. And just talking about his North Node in Cancer, like that is about like looking at personal love and sensitivity and feelings and your own rhythms and not just like stepping up to the plate and achieving. So that's where he dharmically needs to focus.
Yeah, I like that. It's pulling information in from all directions. I sometimes think of all these things like astrology and tarot and things like that as different versions of, or different looking in the mirror from a different angle, kind of like the elephant in the room idea, right? Like gather these pieces and take a look at them. Yeah.
Right. Different lenses that give you different, different understandings and different perspectives. And it's and, not either or.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. Well, I would never think of you as a flaky person. And if you are, you're my type of flake. So I like it. Anyway, we're going to take a little station break. Don't go away. My amazing guest, Judy Safrir, and her book is Sacred Psychiatry, Bridging the Personal and Transpersonal to Transform Health and Consciousness. We have so much more to talk about. You really do want to stay with us and come back, because we're going to dive into exactly what it is that Judy does. That's right. We'll be right back. This is Loretta Brown.
Did you know if you're an adult living with asthma or COPD, getting sick with pertussis may result in severe complications? Pertussis, or whooping cough, is a serious respiratory illness. Vaccination is the best way to help protect against pertussis. Speak to your healthcare provider to ensure you are up to date on your Tdap vaccination. Learn more at lung.org.
Energy is powerful. It's all around us, mysterious, full of potential. Directing positive, healing energy to raise your vibrational rate through Reiki can change your life. Reiki Master Loretta Brown has relieved stress, sadness, anger, and even helped clients lose weight, stop smoking, and end sleep disorders. Worldwide, people have sought out Reiki Oasis. If you want help with your dis-ease, visit ReikiOasis.com. Harness life's energy. Visit ReikiOasis.com today.
Alternative Talk 1150. We're on your radio at 1150 AM. We're on your HD radio at 98.9 Channel 3.
So many ways to listen.
We're on the web at 1150kknw.com. Streaming live audio and video as well as MP3 archives of many of our shows.
So many ways to listen.
And now, we're on your smartphone or tablet. Download our free app in the Apple App Store or Google Play and take Alternative Talk 1150 anywhere you go.
So many ways to listen.
Wherever you go, Alternative Talk 1150 is here for you.
Woohoo! Moondance. Doing a wonderful moondance today with Judy Safrir, MD, and she has a great book, Sacred Psychiatry. I want to remind everybody that these shows are archived, downloadable for free on the KKNW 1150 AM archives for the original Loretta Brown Show. And of course, we're also on iTunes, Podcast One, Spotify, Megaphone X, YouTube. Oh, I'm sure I left something out. We're all over the place. And please go back. Like I said, you can listen to the show over and over again. And there's lots and lots of many other shows. We have so much to talk about, Judy, but I'd love to talk about the white lions. You have a lovely picture behind you, and there's the moon is on there with the white lions. And could you just tell us about them?
Well, that's how I began my book. I began my book with describing a trip that I made to Africa in 2013. It was a trip in support of conservation with Maurice Fernandez, who I was studying astrology with at that time. And the white lions are very special creatures. There's a Shangaan African legend about their origins. They're a genetic anomaly. They are literally quite, you know, light in color compared to like a golden lion. And the legend goes that they're star beings who came down to Earth to help humankind, like during the Ice Age, it was when they first appeared, to help human beings to survive and to learn to hunt. And once the danger was past, they left again, and they said that they would only return if human beings were in danger again. And now they have started to be born again. And there was a African shaman, Zulu shaman named Credo Mutwa, who said that the message of the white lions is that either human beings bow to the primacy of nature and treat nature with love and respect, or that we're going to go extinct. And so that is the message that the lions are here to share with us. And I began the book with describing sitting with the white lions. We would go out with the Jeep and at sunrise and sunset, and just they would come and sit around the Jeep and sort of commune with us. And there was a male lion who just roared and roared and roared as we were sitting there. And it felt like he was just saying, you know, people wake up, you know, this is what is going on and things need to change.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to do that. I can feel that. You said something during the break about the age of Aquarius and the age of Leo. Can you bring
yes.
that forward?
Yeah. So in astrology, in the zodiac, there are 12 signs. And so there's 6 pairs. And so every sign is paired with the one 180 degrees across the wheel. So earlier, Loretta was talking about the eclipses and the North Node and Libra and Aries. So that's a pair. And we're now moving, or we are in, it's not really clear when exactly it started or if it has yet started, but we are in the process of moving into the age of Aquarius. And so these signs, these pairs of signs, they form a polarity and they complement one another. So if you're in the age of Aquarius, you need to look for what is the medicine to help to make it all complete. And that is the energy of Leo, which is symbolized by the lion. And what we were talking about during the break is that, you know, Aquarius can be very cold and very cerebral and very the collective and impersonal and technology. And the archetype of Leo is very different than that. It's the individual's contribution, their own creative self-expression. It has everything to do with the heart. It has to do with courage. And so that lion Leo energy is very much needed to heal whatever shadow side of Aquarius we may be experiencing during the Aquarian age.
I love it. Absolutely love it. I love how you weave all this together. I want to go dive deep in a little bit deeper into what it is that you actually do and some of the things that you treat or deal with. During the break, I mentioned, you know, people that are on medications, psychiatric medications, and let's just start there because you've got so much. I want to make sure that people know what you do.
Yeah. So there's a chapter in the book that's about weaning from psychiatric medications. And these days, the paradigm for treating psychiatric symptoms such as depression, anxiety, brain fog, insomnia is you identify symptoms and you select a pharmaceutical to suppress the symptoms. And there really is not attention paid to lifestyle factors that contribute to creating those symptoms or to other underlying conditions that could be responsible for a person having those symptoms. So people are just put on medications, and often they're put on multiple medications, and often they're put on medications for side effects to treat the side effects of the original medication. And sometimes people decide, I don't want to be on these medications. I want to get off of them, but then they can't. And they were not sufficiently advised that it may be difficult to get off the medications, that once you're on them, that your nervous system in some kind of way gets adjusted and calibrated to them. And if you try to stop them, that you are going to have potentially, not everybody, but many have serious withdrawal syndromes. And like the way that I was trained is that this really wasn't an issue. You know, like you just, you half it, you reduce it by half, and then you reduce it again by half, and then you take them off of it. Well, you do that with people who have been on certain of these medications for any kind of period of time, and they start to really suffer. So people come to see me because I have a method of weaning people from psychiatric medications. And I typically will not do it right away when they come to see me. I first want them to start to follow an anti-inflammatory diet. I want them to start doing mind-body-spirit practice to calm down their autonomic and limbic systems. So I want them to get into some kind of supported, stabilized state before I start to reduce the medicines. And then when I do start to reduce them, we reduce them very slowly and very cautiously. Like the maximum I will reduce is 10% a month. And if that's too much, we'll do 5%. If they're symptomatic, we may not reduce the next month and stay there. So it's just done in a very personalized and careful, cautious way, because some patients literally have PTSD from withdrawal syndromes. I've had patients that live in this kind of fear and sort of paranoia that something's going to happen to the supply chain and they're not going to be able to get their medications and that they're going to go into withdrawal because it was so awful.
Yes. I'm also listening to what you're saying about an entire program. I think you alluded to something earlier in the show about nutrition and the environment and its effect upon us. So pull that piece out just a little bit.
Well, you know, nutrition is incredibly important. It's very foundational to what I do. So when I have, before I agree to see somebody, I have an initial brief phone conversation with them and I ask them about their diet and I ask them about how willing are they to make changes and how motivated are they and do they know how to cook? Because that is really a piece that is so important and integral to feeling, having a sense of well-being. And so, you know, I mean, the typical American diet is, you know, full of processed and packaged foods. It's full of foods that are produce that is heavily sprayed with high pesticide residues. And so that all needs to be attended to and cleaned up because inflammation is very those things cause inflammation in the body, and that is very much linked with psychiatric symptoms.
Yes, and can you talk about mast cells? What are mast cells and mast cell activation syndrome? You talk about it in your book.
Yes, there's a chapter in the book about complex chronic medical conditions, because this is also something that people come to see me. I was saying to Loretta during the break that, you know, I'm usually not the first stop. Like, people have seen other psychiatrists before, or they've been seeing conventional medical practitioners and not getting help. And so mast cell activation is a condition that causes a lot of psychiatric symptoms and through causing inflammation in the body and in the brain. And it is very often not recognized by psychiatrists or other conventional medical practitioners. We all have mast cells all over our body. They are a white cell that is part of the immune system. And we have the highest concentration of mast cells in the areas of our body that interface with the environment. So, like, we have a high concentration in our gut, because that's where the food comes in and gets exchanged and taken into our body, or our lungs with air. And the mast cells are these white cells that are filled with little pouches that contain bioactive substances like histamine and serotonin and tryptases. And when they're functioning appropriately and in a healthy way, there's some kind of intruder or invader or something problematic, and the mast cells come and they release their substances and they neutralize the problem. And that is like a protective immune response. But if there is a condition that is causing them to release their substances in an excessive, chaotic way, and there can be many different underlying causes that have mast cell activation as the final common pathway. So people can have elevated toxins in their system from mold, and they're having mast cell activation. They can have chronic Lyme disease and have mast cell activation. Long COVID is very much mediated by mast cell activation. A person can have a car accident and have trauma to their cervical spine and end up having mast cell activation. Or they can have mast cell activation because they're in an abusive relationship and they're just in a constant state of fight or flight. There's a big relationship between the mast cells behaving in a calm, healthy manner and the limbic system of our brain, which is related to our trauma response. So you need to treat the mast cell. So if somebody comes and they have anxiety, you know, like, you want to find out about other physical symptoms they have, because it may be that the way to help with their anxiety, one of the ways to help with it, is to calm down the mast cells, which can be done by prescribing supplements which stabilize the mast cells. There's some pharmaceuticals which stabilize the mast cells. Antihistamines are also part of the protocol. There's a whole way of approaching mast cell activation, which is enormously helpful to people in terms of their psychiatric symptoms. And it's not appropriate to treat with an anti-anxiety medicine.
Wow, you just connected so many dots. I'm just catching up to it. Like, it was like, wow, wow, wow. So when somebody, because I'm really getting this inflammation, I'll just say that, in the body, it interferes with everything. It absolutely interferes with everything. So let's say somebody has trauma, which a lot of people have, you know, post-traumatic COVID trauma, or we've got pandemic trauma, like we really do. And it's activated all kinds of old traumas, is what I'm coming across.
100%.
You know, yeah. Even past life traumas, like everything's coming into the room. But that loop, people get stuck on that limbic loop.
Right.
Yeah. So this sort of thing can help with that. And talk about that a little bit, the limbic brain.
So
that's
another thing that I recommend almost to all of my patients, is some kind of limbic system retraining, brain retraining. Right now, there are two primary ones that I'm using. One I have a lot of experience with, which is the Gupta program, which is absolutely excellent. It's something that they download from the internet, and it costs like $400. And it's a self-study kind of thing. It's very clearly laid out, very clearly structured. There's a lot of online support that is given. And a person learns to do these practices, which can help them like get out of destructive thought loops. Practices which guided meditation practices, which really calm down the autonomic nervous system. And that is what needs to happen. You know, like that needs to happen in order to successfully wean from medicine. That's what needs to happen in order to treat mast cell activation. So there's the Gupta program, which is one, and there's a new one that patients have been raving about, which is called Primal Trust. And I'm less familiar with it, but it appears to be really excellent and addresses the limbic system and the vagus nerve and very much focused on dealing with trauma.
Yeah, I love that. I was thinking about having Dr. Hawkins on my show. He was talking about the neuroplasticity of the brain, and he has the GAIN meditation, right? Which helps to, you know, shift all of that stuff going on up there. But I'm really making that connection between the gut, the inflammation, and even higher consciousness, because you have a lot of things of helping people to make that connection with, I'm going to say, more than the physical, right?
Right, right. That's actually the heart of the book, is chapter one, which is called Reclaiming a Multidimensional Sense of Yourself.
Yeah.
And I like that word reclaiming, because I think we have that, we or had that, and we've lost it, or, you know, we're not in touch with it, but it's available and accessible to us if we do the kinds of practices that help us to feel connected to something larger than ourselves, that help us feel expanded. And so that chapter lists just a number of different practices that people can engage in, which help them to develop that sense of themselves is more than just their physical body and their personality self. And very often patients come in and, you know, they were raised in a Catholic family or a Jewish family, but they just don't resonate with religion or those practices, but they're hungry for a spiritual practice, but they don't know how to go about it. And they're very grateful to be given some concrete suggestions of things that they can do.
Right. So what are some of those things people can do? Do you have a favorite one? Or?
So I often talk with people about this cultural anthropologist named Angelus Arian, who went around the world studying cultures and studied their spiritual practices. And what she noticed was three commonalities. And I think she calls it the blessing way. And the first is prayer. And so prayer is like asking for guidance. Prayer is saying, you know, please help me, please guide me, please show me the way. And you don't even have to know like who you're asking that of, but it's good to do it out loud. There's a book by an author named Annie Lamott. She's written books about spirituality. She's written books about writing. And she has this very cute little slim volume that's called Help, Wow, Thanks, the three essential prayers you'll ever need. Uh-huh. And so help is, you know, asking for help. And you can ask your ancestors for help. You can ask the spirits for help. Just asking for help, just asking. And then wow or thanks is has to do with the second part of Angelus Arian's prescription, which is gratitude. You know, like that is so uplifting to focus upon the blessings in your life and to be grateful for them and, you know, turn your attention away from what is missing or what is lacking and just giving thanks. There's been literal research, you know, done with people who have a gratitude practice. Every night they write down five things that they're grateful for. And then they give them happiness scales before and after, and they compare it with people who haven't done that. And people who write down five things every night that they're grateful for are measurably happier than those who do not. And then the third part of her prescription is sacred action. So that is anything that kind of increases the amount of goodness and beauty in the world. It can be as simple as looking the cashier in the eye at the grocery store and saying thank you and how's your day, and treating them like they're not a widget. simple things. I like making donations. It doesn't have to be a lot of money, but just circulating the energy, donating money to causes that you care about. I like the practice of making offerings, picking a beautiful tree and taking some rice or some lentils or some seeds and throwing them and saying, thank you, bless this garden. Thank you for all of my blessings. Please help me with whatever it is that I need some help with.
I love that. You also encourage people to make altars in their houses.
Yes.
Sacred spaces. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, definitely.
I love that. Well, I'm jumping from thing to thing, but I want to get this thing. Can you talk about ketamine assisted psychotherapy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So ketamine is the only psychedelic that is legal in Massachusetts. And it's a very old medicine that has been around for a long time. It's on the World Health Organization's list of essential medicines because it's so helpful and has such a great safety profile. It's used a lot in pediatric anesthesiology. It's classified as a dissociative anesthetic. And the way that I use it in my practice is with low doses. There are ketamine clinics that have sprung up around the country where people are given high IV doses of ketamine without any kind of attention paid to set or setting, and with completely divorcing it from anything sacred or ceremonial. They're just kind of given a high dose of the drug and often given it multiple times a week. And it can be helpful for some cases of depression, very helpful, but sometimes it's just too much, too soon, too fast. So I like to do it in a much more conservative way, and we do it with a lozenge. And could be helpful for people who have like ruminative thoughts that we were talking about before. Like I have one patient that we do ketamine about every eight. We did a series of six, which is the original. When I first do it with a patient, we do a series of six treatments. So once a week, it's a 3-hour session with a session to integrate and talk about what went on in between. So six sessions in a row. And with this particular patient, like every 8 to 10 weeks, we do a booster because it doesn't hold entirely for him. You know, I have another patient that it's been enormously helpful to help him wean from his addiction to marijuana. He came to see me around his Chiron return, and he had started smoking marijuana when his father died when he was 16, and he never grieved it. And so that's been enormously helpful to him with the addiction. Other people, I have one patient, I mean, she's not depressed the way that man is or has an addictive problem, but she's a very high functioning acupuncturist. And she just feels like since she's done the ketamine treatment, she just is not sweating the small stuff in the same way. She has more perspective. You know, she just feels like she's just feels very stabilized and opened up, and feels she can be present to her patients in a new way.
Yeah, I find it fascinating during a ketamine session. How long is that session? And do people talk? Are you just?
Yes. Yeah, it, okay. It really depends on the person. Like I've had some patients that don't really want to talk, but most do. And I try to use a dose that is not so high that they can't talk.
Right.
But that they are also significantly altered, but that they still can talk. So it's like trying to find that dose, because it's not at all like, okay, you weigh this much, so this is what the dose should be. People are very variable in how they respond to it. And it's like a 3-hour session. So the first, you know, half an hour or 40 minutes, we're doing some kind of sacred ceremony. We're inviting in the directions, calling in the ancestors, setting up an altar, talking about intentions. And then they take the lozenge, and it's administered in two doses. So you give the first dose, and then they hold it under their tongue. And then, you know, around 15 minutes or less later, you tell them to swallow. And then you wait another 10, 15 minutes, and then you give a second dose. And the whole like altered effect is for about 45 minutes to an hour and a half. It's really quite short.
Wow. So we are at the end of our time, Judy. That's ridiculous. thank you for letting me kind of drive you through a little there. I wanted people to know what you do. So Judy Safrir and her book, Sacred Psychiatry, where did they find you?
I have a website, which is my name, judysafrirmd.com. And I have a blog, which you're welcome to subscribe to. And I just wrote a post about synchronicity, which I think is really a pretty interesting one.
I do. Yeah. So thank you so, so much. We are. Thank you, Benny. And to all the listeners, have a really, really great week. And really, Judy, thank you.
Thank you.